Thank you, Mr. McKilling. Happy Sabbath, everyone. Glad to be with you, and welcome to any guests we have joining us here today. Welcome to Sierra Online with us. All of you know that recently, last month, my wife and I celebrated our 25th wedding anniversary. It allowed me to take a moment to kind of look back at the many years that we've been married, to consider the progress and the path that we have been on in our marriage, how we've grown, how we've changed, and how we're still growing. Now, I shared a sermon. This is going back to almost when I moved to California. It was 3 or 4 years ago. It was on the subject of love and respect. And at that time, that was a real pivotal moment, not 3 or 4 years ago, but when we really started studying that topic of love and respect, probably about 10 years into our marriage, so 10 years into the 25, that was a big moment for us, a shift, a kind of a jumping forth in our marriage, where we began to hone some of those principles on love and respect to grow and be closer together as a husband and wife. And so after making such a big stride kind of in that 10 to 12 year time frame in our marriage, I felt pretty good about who I was as a husband. I thought, I knew my wife knew I loved her dearly. She knew I worked hard for her and the family. She knew that I was a husband that would sacrifice. I didn't put my needs before her and the kids, and I served them and I served her. And so it came as a pretty big shock to me and blow when one day, and this isn't all that long ago, she said she felt invisible. She felt invisible. And I thought, invisible? How can you feel invisible? I do so much for you. I serve, I sacrifice, I work so hard, I do errands for you. I work from home. I'm always around you. How could you feel invisible? But that moment was actually a really big moment for our marriage. And it served as another springboard for our marriage, kind of the second big springboard in our marriage. And today I'm going to continue the series that I started at the beginning of this month. You'll recall I gave a sermon in a new series called Cherish, and we talked about how God cherishes us, how Jesus Christ cherishes us. And this is going to be in this first split sermon, part two, and then this afternoon after announcements and special music, part three of that series. We're going to be talking today mostly about cherish through the lens of marriage, but I hope even those who are not married can easily extract principles for any relationship that they want to have a close, cherished relationship with, whether friendships, whether family, that all relationships can benefit from a deeper understanding of this concept or word cherish. Because I know in my own life, I look back and when I said my marriage vows, I was very focused on love. But I said, to love and cherish my wife. And I was locked in on the love part. I worked really hard over the, 25 years we've been married, to love my wife and to grow in that. But I can admit, I thought little to nothing about what the word cherish meant. I understood commitment. I understood putting her first. I understood service. And even if we just step back and we think, when you cherish a physical thing in life, whether that's maybe you love your car, maybe you got some fancy painting that you cherish, maybe it's your engagement ring. If you're newly engaged, boy, that thing is something you cherish, you show off, you hold it dear. Anytime we cherish even a physical thing, we hold it dear. We give it special placement and thought. We pay attention to all the details around it to make sure, A, it doesn't get lost, B, it doesn't get dinged up or messed up in some way. We protect it. We feel pleasure and affection for it. And we showcase it. We want to make sure everybody else sees this thing that we cherish. And doing all that is important to us. And we do that for a thing, not even a human being, just something. So when we apply even those basic principles to how we cherish something, when we apply that to a human relationship, if we cherish someone, not just love them, we watch out and protect everything about them. We're tender and careful with them. We nurture and indulge them. We purposely think about them because they're our delight. We delight in them. We want others to even see their tremendous worth, their strengths, their many talents, their many amazing qualities, so others can appreciate our spouse as we do. When my wife said she felt invisible, I've come to see I was failing in this, and I didn't even know it. This is where love and cherish are so different from each other. Cherish really has to do with the delight in something or someone. Here we're talking about spouses today. Cherish has to do with delight, the emotion of being enthusiastic toward or enthralled with our spouse. And speaking today as a husband, this was clearly something, a missing component in my marriage. And by growing in this area, it has propelled our marriage, even after 25 years, into a new and exciting stage. But lest anyone think that these sermons are geared toward husbands only, they are not. My wife, if she would stand up here and do this with me, she would be able to share ways she didn't understand the concept of cherish. And she too has grown and is growing in ways that have greatly benefited our marriage. Now, I'm going to talk about a book that we hardly ever look at. It's one that I have probably spent some of the least amount of my study ever diving into, and that is the book of Song of Solomon's. Song of Solomon or Song of Songs. And this is a book that I now have a new appreciation for because it really speaks a lot about the concept of cherish, even if it doesn't use those words. So turn with me to Song of Solomon or Song of Songs. We're not going to go through this exhaustively, but I do want to kind of do a chapter flyover and hit some highlights from this tremendous book to highlight the cherished mindset that is contained in this book. If anyone's online and watching this second part of this series, we have the recording for the first sermon already out there on this topic about how God and Jesus Christ cherish us. And I encourage you to watch it because it builds the framework of the example of God and Jesus Christ to which we'll build on today. Now, I'm going to just address up front that the way that this book talks about their loved one, the one they're cherishing, can be a little funny. We don't often compare our spouse to a horse or doves or gazelles. But I want you to kind of ignore the silliness of some of those comparisons, at least silliness in our culture today. And I want you to feel the cherish and the delight that runs through this book. I'm going to read a bit of the first couple highlights out of the NLT, the New Living Translation. You can follow along in whatever you have on your lap. I'll shift back to the New King James after that. But starting in Songs 1, verse 2, it says, "Kiss me. Kiss me again, for your love is sweeter than wine." Verse 4. "Take me with you. Come, let's run." Now, notice this just enjoyment, this delight, this passion that is contained here. Now, skipping down to verse 9. "You are as exciting, my darling, as a mare among Pharaoh's stallions." Verse 10. "How lovely are your cheeks. Your earrings set them afire. How lovely is your neck, enhanced by a string of jewels." Verse 15. "How beautiful you are, my darling. How beautiful. Your eyes are like doves. You are so handsome, my love, pleasing beyond words." Just notice the celebration. Chapter 2, verse 8. Chapter 2, verse 8. I hear my lover coming. He is leaping over the mountains, bounding over the hills. My lover is like a swift gazelle or a young stag. My lover said to me, "Rise up, my darling, come away with me, my fair one." Verse 14. My dove is hiding behind the rocks, behind an outcrop on the cliff. Let me see your face. Let me hear your voice. For your voice is pleasant and your face is lovely. Verse 16. My lover is mine and I am his. He browses among the lilies. Before the dawn breeze blow and the night shadows flee, return to me, my love, like a gazelle or a young stag on the rugged mountains. Let's go over to chapter 4. Chapter 4 and verse 7. You are altogether beautiful, my darling, beautiful in every way. Verse 9. You have captured my heart, my treasure, my bride. You hold it hostage with one glance of your eyes, with a single jewel of your necklace. I'm going to shift back now to the New King James. Verse 10. I'm going to break in about halfway through. How much better than wine is your love and the scent of your perfumes and all spices. Now notice through this how cherishing lifts up, praises, boasts in the one they cherish. Others might never even see it, but it really doesn't matter. They do, and that's all that matters. Now in chapter 5, verses 10 to 16, she describes her beloved. She'll talk about his head, his hair, his eyes, his cheeks, his lips, his hands, his body, his legs, his countenance, his mouth. It's all this delight in her one. And then in verse 16, it says this just key verse. And we'll break into it a little bit. Yes, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, and this is my friend. Now, I'm as a spouse, who would not want to hear those words said by their spouse? He or she is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, and this is my friend. I think when we think about marriage, many of us have come to become good-willed spouses who live their lives together, work for each other, love each other, have, you know, fairly good lives together. But even when all that's true, there can be holes in a marriage, ways that individuals feel invisible, ways they feel uncared for. For cherish, this concept of cherish, to take marriage then to the next level, love already has to exist. That's the framework. So if that's not in place and strong, you know, this idea of cherish can't be added on top yet. But once love is there, love and cherish complement each other. They complete each other, and there's certainly overlap between the two. I personally have seen in my own marriage, and I believe this about marriage, that this concept of cherish can move a marriage from a good marriage further along this continuum that we would point to. If God's design is at the furthest end of what God wants for all marriages, I believe this concept of cherish can take us from good closer to that idea of the fullness of God's design. When I was studying this topic of cherish, I came across a number of books and a number of surveys that asked men and women essentially this question. Does your husband or does your wife love you? And what's interesting is when they ask that question, it is almost 100% that the answer is yes. People that are in marriage often feel very content knowing their spouse or their one loves them. But what is interesting in these studies, these surveys, these books, is that when they ask a slightly different question, and it might be something around the lines of, does your wife or does your husband like you? The difference of subbing out love for like often causes couples to pause or a person to pause and have to think much differently about that question. Because regardless of how we might look up in Oxford Dictionary the definition of like, when we say that, it resonates with us in that moment of in that realm of delight. When we say, do they like you? It's essentially asking the question, do they delight in you? Do they cherish you? And the good news is, from experience, from studies, individuals can learn to cherish their spouse at a much greater level, and that can propel marriages and relationships forward. Learning to cherish adds joy, fulfillment, satisfaction, and happiness to a marriage. Now, I wrote in my notes, if you don't need this sermon, I'm so happy for you. That's great. I'm glad that you already delight in your spouse. They delight in you, and I'm thrilled for you. But it's also possible that some of you could be like me, who, as hard as I was working, as hard as I was sacrificing all that I was doing, my wife could still feel invisible, still feel uncherished. Even if I didn't know at the time even terminology to say it, or they didn't, or she didn't. I think cherish is the action that is the separating factor between truly rare marriages, a marriage worth constantly striving for. So I'm going to begin in this sermon, the next sermon, and then next week, diving into a number of details and points on this. I'm only going to cover two in this first part before we take a break for announcements. Point number one to growing in cherish is the concept of you're my only one mindset. You're my only one mindset. And to capture this mindset, I want us to go back to the Garden of Eden, back to the beginning of the Bible, back to the day when Adam watched all the animals of the field and all the birds of the air fly through the sky, the animals frolic and run. And as he watched in this beauty of the garden, surrounded by all this beautiful life that God made, Adam's one wasn't there. Adam's only, one and only wasn't there. And at this moment of creation, when everything else God looked around and said, this is good, this is how I want it, he said, hang on, there's something not good. There's something not good here. Adam doesn't have his one. And so God, out of his very substance, had Adam fall into a deep sleep, and God made Eve. Now, Eve was the only woman in the world. Eve was now the only woman in the world. And I'm sure as Adam regained consciousness, he probably struggled to kind of believe his eyes, what he was literally looking at. This amazing creature who was like him in many ways, but was also not like him in many ways. And it probably made his brain swim. And God made this being, a comparable being, this woman that was so special, so, emotionally different than him, physically different than him, intellectual. She was somehow softer and smoother than he was. There was a kindness to her that was different than how he was made. She was amazing. And on this sixth day of creation, God joined them together. From two, they became one flesh, husband and wife, a family. And in this amazing moment, she was his and he was hers. And there was literally no other woman in the world. There was no Heather. There was no Amanda. There was no Megan. And there was no other men either. There was no Richard, no Alexander, no Timothy. There was no one else to compare each other to. It was just Eve and all that made her a woman. She literally defined in that moment womanhood and wife. And there was just Adam and all that God made him to be as a man. And he literally was the only definition of manhood, of a husband. And neither of them could even begin to fathom the concept of comparing each other to anyone else. There was just them, the only man and woman in the world. And they were enough. They were enough. Now, we live in a world that presents options. Options for what you do when you simply get bored in a relationship. Options for your eyes. Options to lust. Options to compare your spouse to someone else. And if we want a truly amazing marriage, if we want a marriage where our spouse feels cherished, feels seen, heard, noticed, important, honored, delighted in, we have to capture this mindset. You're my only one. You're my only one. Now, we read earlier in Songs of Solomon 2 and verse 16, you don't have to turn back there, but it just simply said, my lover is mine and I am his. In chapter 6 and verse 9, it said, it began, my dove, my perfect one, is the only one. Now, was that true? Was at that moment that this book was written, that was the only one? Well, no, there was other people they could have compared, but it said, my dove, my perfect one, is the only one. Because that was the mindset that we want to capture. My love is mine. I am theirs. They are my perfect one. They're my only one. I mentioned in the last sermon that we recently had the opportunity to go down a couple hours away and see Stephanie and Jordy get married. I love in those moments when the bride comes out to turn and look away from the bride. Now, that might sound funny because the bride is beautiful. She's in her white dress. She's got her hair and makeup done, and that's an amazing moment. But I love to look at the husband because in the moment for that husband, everybody else in the room could be gone for all he cares about or notices. He is seeing his beautiful bride walk down that aisle for the first time to become one with him. And everybody else fades back. And you can, when I watched Jordy the other day, I even captured some of it on video. I didn't get all of it. But you can watch him fiddle with his, I mean, the nervous energy, the tears in his eyes. He had to get a tissue from someone. It's a beautiful moment to see the husband react to his one coming down the aisle. It's a very special moment. And that moment can serve as a goal for every day, a focus and a mindset. Now, men, I'm going to speak to you for a moment. For our wives to feel cherished, they have to know in their very core, they are the only woman in the world for us. They're the only woman in the world for us. We don't have eyes for any other woman in that way. In this world today, that can be really, really hard because the enemy, Satan, has specifically and methodically designed a world and a media that promotes, that provokes lust, that is designed to entice, a world designed to get you to compare the body or the someone else and to become dissatisfied. And I want to think about, for a moment to drive this point home, a beautiful diamond. A beautiful diamond. You go to the store, they bring out this beautiful, beautiful stone. It's gorgeous. It's been polished. It's been cut. It's been crafted to sparkle and shine in the most magnificent ways. And we as humans were drawn to them. Diamonds are just, they're spectacular. They seem to light up in really cool, amazing ways that kind of blow our mind. And we can think that diamond is so special and neat until they bring out another diamond. And that diamond's slightly bigger. Maybe it's slightly cut in a different style. It doesn't really matter, but now I have a comparison. And by comparison, that first diamond seems lesser in some way. That seems maybe smaller or less spectacular in some way. So if we allow ourselves to be drawn into a comparison, Satan will always ensure there are many comparisons available. And this will hurt our spouse's value in our own eyes, our delight in our own eyes. But if they perceive any of that, it's going to hurt them deeply. To cherish your spouse, we must adopt this focus, this mindset, to ask God every day to teach us to see our spouse as the only one in the world, to have them become the very definition to us of womanhood or manhood, of husband, of wife, to be the very standard of what we think is attractive, of beauty, of satisfaction, and to help us to avoid any comparison to another. And these comparisons, they aren't just physical. They go beyond physical. I don't want to compare my wife to any other woman's talents or capabilities, how she handles this versus how someone else does. Because as soon as you start that comparison, can my wife measure up to every other woman in every possible way? Well, no, of course not. This can only lead to disappointment and then a lack of cherishing my one and only. And wives, we don't want to compare our husbands, his looks, his dress, his skill set, his gifts to anyone else. To cherish, they must be our perfect one, our only one, as we read in Songs of Songs. That's where our satisfaction and our delight rests. Because comparisons lead to frustration, to discontent, and eventually anger and distance. Even in a world where we now, not like Adam and Eve, but we live in a world where there's billions of other people, we can choose to have eyes for our one and only. And I've actually seen this done well. It's rare, but it's wonderful to see. My wife's grandfather, we call him Grandpa Mac, him and his wife, they're both dead now. But into his late 90s, I was always amazed by how much he just adored and thought his wife was spectacularly beautiful, that her beauty somehow aged with him. And even in their 90s, he was enthralled by her with her cute little pigtails that she would wear every day. And he would openly, in front of all of us, talk and brag about the beauty of his wife. And I would watch her respond to this with such a beaming that you could tangibly see that she felt cherished by her 90-year-old husband. She was his one, and he was her one. No man and no woman can ever be everything. We can't all be good at finances, a handy person, a great cook, a great organizer, great at fixing the car, musical, a singer, a great leader, well-spoken, social. We all have strengths and we have weaknesses. We have talents and gifts. And since no one can be everything, to cherish our spouse, we can give them the great gift of communicating our adornment and acceptance with our whole being, with our eyes, with our attention, our words, that you're my one and only, and I choose you every time. Any gift or talent our spouse doesn't have, becomes irrelevant, because that's not who we married. That's not who we chose. That's not who we selected to be our one and only. If we didn't pick somebody who's handy, can we later in marriage be upset and criticized that they're not handy? If we chose an introvert, can we later be upset that they're not the social party animal or the biggest, bigger than life personality at social gatherings? Now, that isn't to say that as good-willed spouses and out of love for our spouses, that all of us don't keep trying to grow and develop, that we want to be all we can be for our spouse. But I'm talking about expectations with regards to cherishing. If our cherishing is ever contingent on them becoming something they're not, then we won't likely ever cherish them. Focus on their excellent qualities. Ask God to help you see those excellent qualities and lock in on them and avoid focusing on their inadequacies. So our first point in this first split, part two today, is to develop a you're my only one mindset. You're my only one mindset. Now, number two is lift up and showcase your spouse. Lift up and showcase your spouse. Now, we saw last week, we went to the book of Ezekiel 16, and we saw how God showed that he had taken this bloody, abandoned baby and eventually married her. And then he adorned her, he beautified, he lifted up for the whole world and showcased his wife. Isn't it sad when we have seen a spouse in front of others make fun or tear down their spouse in some ways, whether in jest or bitterness? To cherish our spouse, our job as a spouse is to lift them high, to help others to see how wonderful our spouse is in our eyes. We, by supporting, lifting, and even framing and turning, we help others to see their best sides, their best qualities, their gifts. And we have to understand that because how some of our spouses were raised, how life has impacted them and their journey, they struggle to even see that they have a best side. And then we also have some non-good-willed spouses who will try to break down, whittle away at someone's core of who someone really is so that they can gain control of and abuse a person. And that's awful, and that's unacceptable before God. It's our job and our joy as a spouse to see how amazing and how wonderful they are, to allow their talents and their gifts to shine, for their best sides to flourish. Lifting up and showcasing is all about intentionally choosing to highlight their good qualities and attributes. If our spouse is quieter, if we're the larger-than-life individual, the louder one, the more talkative, this is about choosing to make sure they're seen and heard and help others to see their great qualities. And this takes intention. It doesn't just happen. We have to think, how today can I lift up and support them? Think about what marriage would look like across the world if every spouse knew deeply and completely that their spouse was their biggest fan, their biggest encourager. How different would marriages be? If we focus on ourselves, and this applies to all relationships. I'm hoping that those that aren't married can see some of these principles apply to all of our relationships where we have friendships and different things that we want to feel special and cherished. But if we ever are just focused on ourselves, we're always talking about ourselves, we're lifting ourselves up for everybody to see our great qualities, well, we're really having a love affair with ourselves. And that leads to nothing healthy or good in the Bible. Cherish is a lot about learning to find great pleasure internally in our spouse, to see them shine. I'm going to read Romans 12 and verse 10 from the New Living Translation, NLT, Romans 12 and verse 10. Now, this verse that I'm going to read here isn't written about marriage, but if it applies to just the average relationship we have with people, or people in the church, well, how much greater should this not be seen in marriage and those relationships? Romans 12 and verse 10 from the NLT says, love each other with genuine affection. And notice it says, and take delight in honoring each other. Take delight in honoring each other. We're supposed to do that for all of us. All of us should take delight in honoring each other and to lift someone else up, to showcase them. And this means forgetting about ourselves a bit. We don't have to be the center of attention. We can have joy in them being seen and valued. If your spouse is an introvert, this isn't about putting them in a place front and center that they're going to be super uncomfortable, because putting them center stage might be terrifying. It might make them feel vulnerable. If they're an introvert, cherishing them might be standing right next to them off to the side at social engagements, but making sure they're seen and heard and comfortable in those small conversations. But they know in their heart, we're right there with them. They're safe. They're comfortable. They're enough. Their needs are met. So lifting up and showcasing is about lifting up and making them beautiful, more beautiful, so others can see the best version of them. The way we adore and lift up our spouse might not even make sense to other people. And I'm going to give you an example about this. My wife and I met a couple not too long ago, not from this area, so I'm not talking about anybody here. But it was clear from meeting this wife, she adored her husband. He was the best thing ever. She and they've been married a long time. They weren't like newlyweds. The way she spoke about her spouse was truly special. It was incredible. And then the husband showed up. And I went, this is what all the fuss was about? This is who she was talking about that whole time? And my wife, separately than me, had the exact same thought. But the reality is, it doesn't need to make sense to me. It's not my spouse. I'm not in the relationship. They were happy. They were thriving. They seemed to have one of these truly rare special marriages because they were choosing to cherish each other and to literally see each other that way. Who cares what my perception was on their marriage? I grew in great respect for them both based on how they cherished one another. The second way we cherish our spouse is to lift up and showcase them. So since this is part two of a four-part series that we've just started it today with part two with 2 points of cherishing our spouse, to develop a you're my only one mindset, and two, to lift up and showcase our spouse with their great qualities. We'll now have another hymn.